Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. Anatole Levin returned from Ukraine to interview and write about his experiences there, which were partly accidental and dire. He wounded himself in a fall, but it gave him time to reflect on the experience of the Ukrainian people under bombardment and not in this second year of the war. Anatole, a very good evening to you. Your interview with the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, where you are a very important member, reflects on how the Ukrainian people are experiencing the war. We all look to the next moments of negotiations or war fighting. We're told all the time there's a counteroffensive or there's an offensive underway. But what you witnessed was, I would say, the prince and the pauper. The pauper are the people in the destroyed cities in the east. And the prince are the people in Kyiv that you witnessed going to well-to-do restaurants and enjoying life as best they could in wartime. So let's just start with the princely side. Did that surprise you to see people carrying on their lives with a display of prosperity and confidence? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. At first, it did surprise me, yes. Also, because I'd expected Kyiv to be, worse damaged than it was, and that to be, much more of a sense of a country at war, which you don't really much get in Kyiv, to be honest. But after that, I reflected on history, and if you read about the First World War, while French soldiers were dying at Verdun. Paris, the upper classes of Paris were still in some ways, leading the high life. But that could be storing up trouble, political trouble for the future, because, of course, the veterans, the men who have done the fighting, who have perhaps been wounded, who have seen their comrades die, will not be too happy, I think. I looked into a casino in Kyiv, and I was reminded of a phrase of a British politician about the newly elected House of Commons in 1919, that it was full of hard-faced men who looked as if they'd done very well out of the war. And there is, as we know, a lot of anger in Ukrainian society about official and political corruption. And so undoubtedly, there will also be questions among the ordinary population and among the soldiers about where all this money is coming from to allow people to go to these very expensive restaurants and buy champagne at hundreds of dollars a bottle. So I think that could be an issue for the future. It's also, of course, if you've seen the latest interview with John Sopko, the special inspector for aid to Afghanistan, it's likely to raise some questions in Washington sooner or later.
We go to the pauper side. You visited Irpin, Bucha, and Berdyanka, which were three outskirts of Kyiv, suburbs of Kyiv, much in the news in the early stages of the Russian invasion, where the conduct of the Russian forces was both unacceptable, sadistic, and it looked purposeful. Those places have been destroyed and flattened completely. And
No, they haven't been flattened completely. They were they suffered considerable damage, but most of the houses are okay. That was in the fighting in the first weeks of the war.
And the abuse there was reported to us, and that's the image we had initially of the start of the war. And so what I'm taking from your essay is that there's no generalizing in the Ukrainian war today. It depends on where you are and at what time to talk about how the war is going. Is that a fair I'm trying to generalize because it's a very big country.
Well, it is indeed something that the Russian government should have considered before it invaded. It is a big country, and different parts of it are still, very different and having very different experiences of the war. I mean, the places that I visited, Dnipro and Zaporizhia and Kiev, were little damaged. But clearly, the places that I was not allowed to visit in the front line, like Bakhmut or Mariupol, they indeed have been even destroyed very largely. Very big difference when it comes to Russian atrocities between the areas north of Kiev and at least some of the other areas occupied by Russia is that in the areas north of Kiev, the Russians faced very strong popular resistance from the population. I spent a day with a former local commander of volunteers, who was a most admirable man. He had no military experience whatsoever. He'd been the manager of a chemist's shop. But when Russia invaded, he put together a group of local neighbors. He got some weapons together, partly from the Ukrainian armed forces. And these untrained but tremendously brave and dedicated volunteers played a very important part in stopping the Russian advance on Kiev.
The other part of Ukraine that you observe in your remarks, your interview with Responsible Statecraft, Quincy Institute, is the in-between, neither the pauper nor the prince. We would have called them in the Vietnam era draft dodgers or people who are avoiding conscription. Even messages passed around where the authorities likely to be the next day, I guess, before they round up people for the front line. Is there a notable resistance, or is this isolated instances that people whisper?
People whisper, but it's well known about. And I couldn't say, I honestly could not say how extensive it is. Certainly, as I say, I met both, these people who had been volunteers north of Kiev and in some cases, had then gone on to fight in eastern Ukraine. And I met some very impressive military veterans, wounded veterans of the war. So, there is undoubtedly an extremely strong willingness to fight in Ukraine. But in every war, there will also be people who, for whatever reason, will try to avoid fighting. And, from that point of view, Ukraine is no different from, Britain. In the First or the Second World Wars, you had, on the one hand, a tremendous level of volunteers, but will always be some people who will think they have better things to do.
To the time you spent at the hospital in Zaporizhia, which theoretically was under bombardment, but you say it's a city of 700,000, and the Russians were firing notably inaccurate S-300 missiles. You also mentioned a little detail that I don't recall us touching upon before, but it was revelatory. The hospital did not tape up the windows. What did that tell you, Anatole?
It told me that they were not very afraid of being either hit or having near misses, because if you think that a rocket or shell or bomb is going to land anywhere near you, the first thing that you do is tape up the windows, because otherwise the blast will send glass everywhere, and often it's glass that does most of the injuries. I saw that formerly when I was a war correspondent. And the fact that the first thing that I noticed actually was that they hadn't done that. And that reassured me, really. And in fact, the whole time I was there, the week I spent in that hospital, nothing did land near enough to the hospital to break any of the windows. So
what struck me about the anecdote was that it's human nature to adapt to the circumstances or the place you are in. And it had I had the sense that the Ukrainians had adapted to being under bombardment and had even come to be bold about their camaraderie of facing up to the Russians. Is that something you saw in Kyiv as well throughout the country? Come and get us, bad guys?
Yes, pretty much. Of course, as I say, in the places that I visited, the level of bombardment had not in fact been that great. And as we know from the Second World War, from the Blitz on London and indeed the Allied bombing of Germany, people can stand up to much, much greater levels of bombardment, certainly if they feel that, you know, they have no choice and if they're committed to the war. I mean, from that point of view, as I have said, I mean, if the Russian government calculates that they can terrify the Ukrainian population into surrender, they're making exactly the same mistake that first Hitler made as regards the British. But then I have to say that the British Bomber Command headquarters made about the Germans. And yes, I mean, people have become very resilient, and of course, but at the same time, I mean, they've become very angry. Undoubtedly, the fact that in, you know, Zaporizhia, a town, you know, where most people still speak Russian at home, where almost everybody is largely or partly of Russian descent, the fact that, and that previously, before 2014, voted for pro-Russian candidates, you know, today you find no sympathy, you can imagine, no sympathy whatsoever for Putin or the Russian government or the Russian armed forces in Zaporizhia. And that is, you know, a very understandable and predictable result of having been bombarded for a year.
And to the stalemate observation, Bakhmut, or what happened before Mariupol, not only artillery, you say that there are lots of mines. And so the likelihood of breakthrough at Bakhmut is little or minimal. Complete destruction of the terrain. That is flattening. I've seen photographs.
Indeed.
And that has led people to observe that there will be an accommodation, that we've fought each other to a standstill, that we're now standing off and throwing artillery shells at each other. No breakthroughs. And so conversation is turning to, let's settle this at a table. Is that how it's going?
Well, one could certainly draw that conclusion from these latest Pentagon leaks that have come out, because it seems that the American military do not think that a Ukrainian breakthrough is likely. And, you know, undoubtedly one reason for that is that, of course, that not just the Russians have dug in, but they've dug in behind very thick minefields. Now, that's not a certainty. You know, the Ukrainians have surprised us repeatedly in the past with their victories. They could do it again. But certainly, I think at least some people in Washington and in Europe are now beginning to think about what will need to happen if, in fact, the Ukrainian offensive failed. And there are also indications, of course, not just in Europe, but also in sections of the US Congress, that the West will not be willing or able to keep up its aid to Ukraine at the present level forever. So it is possible that later this year we will see the beginning of peace talks.
Yes, peace
talks. Or at least talks for a ceasefire.
Yes, let's talk about a ceasefire. Let's talk about peace talks when we come back, because their diplomatic motion at the highest levels of government around the world, from South America to Asia to Moscow, possibly. This is Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, returned from Ukraine. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.